This is Red, Chapter 5. Learn. The next day was filled with cleaning and preparing the schoolhouse. It left Jim and Spock little time to talk more, and Spock and McCoy none at all, until after third meal, where Jim abruptly excused himself upstairs, leaving Spock and the doctor alone. Dr. McCoy, may I have a word with you before you retire for the evening? McCoy looked at the stairs where Jim had disappeared, suspicion written on his brow, and cleared his throat meaningfully, leaning away from the table.
May I interest you in a bit of red grain, Spock?
No, thank you. The doctor smirked.
I'm no fan myself. It's vile, but easy to make,
McCoy said. He fished out a flask and offered it to Spock.
I get a little Kentucky bourbon on trading day.
Spock took a small sip and offered it back. McCoy did not partake, which made Spock think he failed some unwritten test.
So, Lieutenant, how may I assist you?
I have been advised to speak with you. McCoy sat silently, his expression a perfect bedside neutral.
I am interested in initiating a romantic relationship with Jim, Spock explained.
He indicated that he would prefer that I use the traditions of this culture to proceed. McCoy blinked, moving his gaze beyond Spock's head in thought for a moment, and then returned, not a facial muscle giving away what the man was thinking.
I understand I am not a desirable Azunite partner, but I wish to give Jim the opportunity to know me under the familiar and comfortable customs with which he has been raised, to make his own choice.
McCoy looked sharply at that.
And what if he doesn't choose you? Would you accept that with no argument and complete your assignment on Red honorably?
Spock nodded solemnly.
And what if he does?
Spock would not lie. He had thought that far ahead. Had thought about joining his life with Jim. About the probability of such an event, what options would be open to them. He had thought of a few dozen scenarios, and paperwork and Starfleet bureaucracy that went with each. Fantasies, his mother would call them. Idle wishes for the future, thought in the rare, slow moments on the mission. I do not know. But Jim and I would decide together. The doctor's face lightened infinitesimally.
Thank you for speaking with me, Lieutenant. I'll let you know when I've made a decision.
Spock knew a dismissal when he heard one, and made a hasty retreat back to the bunkhouse, stealing a look over his shoulder to Jim's window, where he could see the man's figure in silhouette, looking down the yard that separated them. For most families, the time after harvest was a slower time. Time to pickle and cure, time to send the children to school, and not much else. But at the mission, they had all that and more. The first day of school arrived just a scant few days after the harvest festival. Bluebell decided to go into earnest labor the night before. Jim and Spock at the edge of the barn, waiting patiently for the first signs of the new kids to arrive. Spock spent the wee hours of the morning assisting Jim in delivery and wrapping three baby goats in blankets before they were ready to totter over to Bluebell for their first breakfast a half hour later. By the end, they were exhausted, but happy, Jim leaning against the stall, shoulders purposely touching Spock's.
You did well, Jim commented. A regular goat midwife.
I have assisted in birthing once before, Spock shared, which then led to him telling the story of being trapped in a space anomaly with Ensign Brown and delivering her fully grown anomaly-affected daughter in the back of the shuttle, technically 7 months premature.
That's amazing, Jim said, awe painted on his face. You all aged months in an instant.
Presumably, Spock agreed. We were grateful we were rescued before Ensign Brown's daughter started teething. Walking out of the barn, he was surprised to see a neat line of children lined up outside the schoolhouse. They stared wide-eyed as they saw their teacher, dirty and worn from a night of kidding Bluebell, walking out of the barn with Jim, holding dirty blankets.
I see you've already made a first impression, Jim observed ruefully.
I will be late, Spock observed. I'll take care of this, Jim said, indicating the line of students. You go get cleaned up. Spock took the offer gratefully and strode down to the bunkhouse. When he returned, the children were already inside, sitting in an organized fashion. Heads whipped to the back of the room where Spock entered, awe and interest painted on their faces. Teacher, I thank you again for sharing in the work this morning, Jim said, obviously having filled in the younglings of the morning's adventure. Good fortune to have you here. Spock nodded gratefully and took his place at the front of the class. Have a good day, Jim murmured, and took off to the mission house. Spock looked around the room. 43 pairs of eyes stared at him expectantly. Welcome. On my desk are learning surveys. Please select the one that best fits your needs, and we will begin. Spock had read several texts on the education of the developing human brain and the history of education on Earth, and had planned to use an optimal blend of Terran and Vulcan education practices, and felt adequately prepared for the task of educating Azonite Young. He was not prepared. By the time second meal was announced, Spock was suffering from a slight tension headache and still could not figure out how to properly organize the youth into groups for mathematics lessons based on his initial proficiency assessment. When he dismissed them, the children scrambled out the door, eager to secure the best spot for their outdoor lunch, leaving Spock surveying the organized chaos in their wake. How was it? Jim asked from the doorway, holding a tin box. Productive, Spock admitted. They are keen to learn. I hope I am suited to the task. The man shared a pleased smile and held out the box. Bones made okra gumbo and bread. Spock gestured him inside, but Jim shook his head. Sorry, teacher, it wouldn't be proper, he said, not budging from the doorway, in plain sight of the children eating under the red ash trees. As if anticipating Spock's next logical question, when work necessitates, the rules can be bent, but this is a bit different, for now, he said in a quieter voice, until we have approval. Spock couldn't look away from Jim's face, flitting from bashful empathy and something undefinable. I understand, he replied, walking from his desk to the back where Jim stood. He took the handle of the tin box, laden with food, but Jim didn't let go right away. I'm glad you're doing this, Jim said, before he hustled out the door into the barn, leaving Spock wondering if he meant teaching or courting. He stood, a little dumbfounded, until he heard a chorus of giggles outside. He snapped to attention and quelled the chitters with a look, and took his lunch to his desk and ate in contemplative silence. When Spock finally walked up to the mission house, Jim and McCoy had already finished the barn chores, and third meal was ready. In the first week of school, I usually do a brief checkup on the students, McCoy explained while ladling soup into three bowls. Most of these children were born on red without the modern neonatal interventions, so the health screenings are even more important. Zipporah Sulu appears to have moderate myopia, Spock commented. McCoy looked up from his soup. Oh? She avoids reading and squints at any text further than her desk. I'm given to understand it's an easily correctable procedure for humans. McCoy nodded, unperturbed. Send her to the mission house after second meal tomorrow. I'll take a look. A beat passed, and before Spock could ask, I can put in an order for the corrective lenses before trading day. Lenses? Spock asked, unfamiliar with the medical application. Glasses. Humans have used them for centuries. There's still a need for them, for the rare patient who can't or won't undergo the modern corrective procedure. Would not the corrective surgery be of more utility? Spock asked. Humans have had bad eyes since the dawn of time. The lenses remind us of the work we can do to care for our bodies, McCoy pronounced, which marked the end of that conversation. Medicine is a sore subject with him, if you haven't noticed, Jim confided quietly that evening, in a passing moment before Spock left for the bunkhouse. He was trained as a Starfleet doctor, Spock observed. Jim nodded. Something happened before I arrived. I can't talk about it, but I thought you should know it isn't you. I understand the sentiment. I know it doesn't make much sense, Jim said, gesturing around himself, an expressive wave of his hands meant to encompass the whole of Red. But it's one of the few things that seemed safe and made sense.
I wish to understand, Spock said softly.
I know, Jim said, smiling.
Good night, Spock,
he said in a louder voice, eliciting a snort behind Spock's shoulder.
Good night, Jim, Dr. McCoy.
Good night, Spock,
the doctor drawled, allowing Spock to pass him on his way back to his bunkhouse, alone. More than a week had passed, and a new rhythm established itself. Spock introduced an ecology unit to their studies that most found fascinating, and so long as Spock didn't include any modern technology, McCoy and the elders had given it their enthusiastic blessing. That meant every afternoon they went hiking and learned scientific principles, which had the added benefit of assisting with Spock's biogeographical understanding of the planet. Jim would give him ideas to set up observation stations, but otherwise carefully kept his distance and spoke even less to him than ever before. No more late-night calibration of scanners or discussions about the experiments Spock followed prior to his assignment on Red. Spock didn't feel lonely, but was aware of Jim's presence and lack thereof acutely.
Ahem. These are the rules, McCoy said abruptly after they had finished clearing off the table. No socializing unescorted.
What? Jim looked hopefully at Spock. But we haven't... Jim started, but the doctor raised his hand, halting his words.
If this is going on under my roof with someone not accustomed to our ways, I need to be explicit. No socializing unescorted. Keep your words to each other respectful. Nothing you wouldn't want to say in front of meeting for all to hear. He ticked off fingers as he went. If you want to exchange notes, you exchange them through me. No sealed envelopes. No closed doors. You have half an hour every night to yourselves where you are within ear and eyeshot.
He paused, leveling Spock with a stern look.
Keep your shirts and your pants on at all times.
Bones! Jim hissed, blushing furiously.
You wanted to play by our rules. Those are the rules.
Jim, still red-faced, nodded and met Spock's eyes questioningly. Spock nodded.
I agree.
Well then, McCoy said, leaning back in his chair and patting his full stomach, satisfied.
You kids have fun now.
End of chapter 5. Author's note. Dear gentle reader, I could write Jim and Spock being sweet on each other forever. Thank you for reading. This is Red, Chapter 6, Grief. Jim and Spock stood outside, with the door wide open and the curtains pulled back from the windows, affording Dr. McCoy a clear view of the two men, facing off as if about to duel. Spock backed up 2 steps to allow Jim a seat on the porch swing. Spock took the seat beside him, leaving a wide gap between them. Jim's jaw worked over a few times, as if trying to replace his tongue to its normal place, not quite smiling, but looking up at Spock's unwavering gaze, and quirking his lips in a pleased sort of way, then looking back outside. He kicked out his feet, and Spock allowed him to swing the chair gently. The ensuing silence felt peaceful and intimate after a long day. "Do you have any siblings?" Jim finally asked, surprising Spock with the simple question.
"An older brother," Spock said. He had sharp yet scant memories of a man more than 20 years his senior.
"Cybok. We are not close." "I have a brother, too. 5 years older. His name is Sam. We were close when we were little." Jim frowned. "He ran off just before I was sent away to Tarsus. He's a biologist and married, with a baby on the way." He paused, scratching the back of his neck. "Actually, the baby's probably already been born. I guess that makes me an uncle. I'll usually get letters on trading day from him." I have not heard from my brother in 22 years.
Do you miss him?
No. Jim appeared to take the answer at face value and didn't comment. However, Spock felt compelled to add, I have wondered what it would be like to have a sibling growing up, to have someone I could converse with who was not an adult. Jim smirked. I had 10 foster siblings. There was no conversing, only squabbling, fighting for the shower, pranking and running away like mad. You know the black stain in the corner of your bunkhouse? Spock nodded. One time, Ben and I wanted to scare Collie. She was a few years older than us, always bossing us around, you know? So we got some of Bones' medical supplies and rigged what we thought was going to be a stink bomb, and then we... Ahem. Spock looked behind him, where Bones had stuck his head out the door. Why do I recall you swearing on your life, on penalty of 6 weeks of extra chores, that only Ben was involved in stealing my medical supplies? Jim's eyes widened, and Spock could easily imagine how Jim got out of so many scrapes by his charm alone. Perhaps, Spock suggested, the statute of limitations has run out. Jim gaped a little incredulously at the Vulcan, and Bones chuckled indulgently. Time to say goodbye to Spock, Bones announced, turning on his heel. Spock moved to his feet at the same time Jim did, both of them rocking forward and lurching back, as if fighting the magnetic pull between them. Good night, Jim murmured. Good night. The next day, Dr. McCoy stopped by to conduct physicals for the school children. He spent a long time watching groups of students prepare various samples from the shore of the river that ran to the north of the mission property. Industrious, he commented, earning the prideful beaming of the youngest group, holding up their samples of various seeds they had collected. Tell me about your work. One of the oldest students, 16-year-old Pavel, explained his group's hypothesis about saline qualities of the banks and how it could affect keystone species. The youngest displayed their diagrams of the biomes near their own homesteads and their surveys of the domesticated and native flora. Pride, Spock knew, was illogical. However, at that moment, he was quite illogical. It took McCoy 3 days to complete all the physicals. It was the largest group of children to come to the school, McCoy noted, and was especially pleased to have more than half of the colony children in school and available for a yearly physical. Weights, heights, blood pressure, and reflexes were all recorded with ancient-looking tools Spock may have seen in a history book as a child. It's as you suspected, McCoy said during lunch recess, when he and Spock were guaranteed to be free of young ears. Zippy does need some glasses, and Pavel's braces are ready to come off. Otherwise, they're a healthy group. Spock nodded, surprised when the doctor reached into his back pocket and withdrew a tightly folded square of paper and dropped it on his desk. Have a good day, teacher. He waited until he couldn't see McCoy's retreating back, and then opened the note, surprised to see a long list of writing in Jim's distinctive hand, titled, Questions to Ask Spock. 1. Did Spock have a hobby? Liar? Get him to play it for me? Number 2. Scratched out. Does he have someone waiting for him back home? Number 3. What was Spock going to do when he returned to Starfleet? Number 4. What is his favorite food? And the list went on and changed to much more personal questions around question 23. Number 25. Does Spock want kids? Number 26. Where does he want to live? Number 27. Do Vulcans... The paper was then torn at the edge, the end of that sentence lost. Jim had written the questionnaire. Could be inferred he started the list long before Spock had broached the subject of courting. Despite the late night hours in Spock's lab and their precious half hour after dinner, perhaps Jim had difficulty asking Spock to reveal his mind, as Spock did, although for different reasons. He withdrew a lined sheet of composition paper from his desk and started to write. Jim had spent the day at the Sulu farm helping Bin and Hikaru with the red boars, getting them ready for winter foraging. When Spock had finished his day teaching and entered the mission house for supper, he was surprised to see that Jim had already returned, and McCoy was rummaging in a large wooden cabinet.
"Juniper Sulu is in the throes of childbirth," Dr. McCoy announced. "Normally, the Sulus would have a birth well in hand themselves, but this is her first child, and it's not coming along."
Foreign metal contraptions, wrapped in plastic, were placed in a surgical bag on the kitchen table, and Jim assisted in organizing vials with practiced ease. "I suspect we'll be back in the middle of true night."
"May I be of any assistance, Doctor?"
McCoy shook his head, gratefully.
"The joyful work is well at hand, thank you. I'll be taking Jim with me. He's helped in childbirth before, and you'll understand if you two can't be eating supper together alone."
"If I may," Spock interjected, withdrawing a neatly penned note of his own and passing it across the table to the doctor. McCoy opened the note, gave it a cursory glance, and passed it over to Jim, who refolded it hastily and slipped it into his pants pocket.
"Thank you," Jim said, heat rising in his cheeks. "Let's go, lovebirds," the doctor groused. "Babies wait for no one."
Spock watched Jim and McCoy make their way over the hill towards the Sulu farm. He stood on the porch until the pair made it to the top of the hill, and Jim turned and waved, and stopped for Spock to wave back. Spock was still awake and working on his lab samples in the bunkhouse when Jim and McCoy returned. There was a quiet knock on the door, and he was surprised it was Jim alone, not the doctor, who came to his door.
"The baby didn't make it," Jim said quietly, his face lined with sadness. "He was stillborn, well before we got there."
Spock reached out, his hand firmly on the man's shoulder.
"I grieve with thee." "Bones went to bed, I think. But I thought I should tell you."
Spock nodded, not removing his hand, feeling the sadness rolling off of Jim in waves.
"Sit," Spock said. Not quite an invitation or a question, but Jim took the 2 steps inside his makeshift lab and took the seat he had always thought of as Jim's and sat next to him, shoulder to shoulder, like they had sat in the barn after a long night after Bluebell had her kids. Jim wiped his eyes several times and then sighed, leaning on Spock quite deliberately.
"We will say our goodbyes formally at the next meeting," Jim said. "It's their way." In a Vulcan funeral, the mind, the Katra, is moved to a safe location, if possible. It is believed that with the loss of an infant, their Katra lives within the mother and is passed on to the next child as a protection.
"That's beautiful."
Spock nodded.
"I agree."
Spock walked Jim partway back to the mission house in the moonless true night. When he turned back, he made a slight detour. Doubtful that the doctor wanted Jim to know where he was, Spock felt it was necessary to see why McCoy was in the grove of trees behind the school.
"You're as quiet as an Orion ox," the doctor said wryly, sitting on a tree stump, a small lamp next to him.
"I apologize for interrupting," Spock said.
The doctor had changed shirts, but he looked just as worn as Jim.
"No, I understand. I'm okay. Just needed to check on someone."
He suspected it was McCoy and not the school children who had worn a walking path to this spot in the trees. There was no one there, but a single stone marker, the writing indiscernible in the lamplight. The doctor rubbed the top of the marker fondly, taking some comfort from the stone.
"We buried my daughter here."
Spock took a few more steps, noticing the carefully tended wildwood flowers and violet star petals.
"What was her name?" "Joanna."
Bones sat, head bowed over his hands for a long moment.
"Our 3rd year on Red, we had a virus sweep through the colony. The onset was quicker and more vicious than anything I'd ever seen. It hit the children the hardest, and Joanna was just a baby and asthmatic. She didn't react to the treatment the way we anticipated. By the time we sent the distress beacon, it was too late."
"I grieve with thee," Spock intoned quietly, Bones nodding his acknowledgement of the Vulcan condolence. My wife left after that. She thought if we were on Earth, Joanna would still be alive. Maybe she would have, maybe not. I still lost a lot of patients when I practiced modern medicine. I learned that there are no easy solutions or shortcuts when it comes to protecting and preserving life. McCoy sighed. I don't claim to know the answers. I just know what is here before us.
Kaid.
What is. McCoy translated, his lips quirking as if remembering something humorous.
Yes, essentially.
A very Azonite sentiment. Spock looked again at the gravestone, red rock that McCoy likely chiseled himself. I shall leave you to your meditation.
Thank you.
And Spock.
Yes, Doctor.
Don't think I didn't notice Jim sneaking into the bunkhouse.
Of course not, Doctor, he replied quickly, too agreeable by half.
Don't misunderstand. Jim's never trusted anyone enough to grieve, long before he came to Red, I think. Bones patted the gravestone again. He needs someone who will be there for him. He considered the man's words.
I believe I could be that person for him.
Maybe you already are.
End of chapter 6. Author's note. Hello, gentle readers. Sorry for the long delay. I hope you are still enjoying the story. On a personal note, this week I had a profound experience with the cost of neglecting what we put aside to help, love, and support others. Many of us don't make sure we take time to fill our own cups before we start pouring into others, and I was thinking that writing this story and sharing it with you is one of those things that fills my cup. I should really get back to it. And lo and behold, Owee Hewins was gently checking in, seeing if all was well and if there might be another chapter. It was meant to be. My cup is filled. I'm envisioning warm hot chocolate or tea, and I hope you feel it too.